Greetings. This is Pastor Steve Schlissel from Messiah's Congregation in Brooklyn, New York, and I have the privilege this evening to speak with Dr. R.J. Rushdoony, who is the founder and president of the Chalcedon Foundation. I'll try to give you their name and number throughout the program so that you can avail yourself of some of the literature and materials that they have. In fact, there's one set on history that Dr. Rushdoony has done. It's an extensive set of cassette lessons on history that you should definitely order, and you could get your credit card and order it by calling 209-736-4365 or drop $2 in an envelope and ask for a Chalcedon Report sample issue and mail that to Box 158 in Vallecito, California. That's V like Victor, A-L-L-E-C-I-T-O. The zip there is 95251. If you didn't get it, don't worry. I'll give it to you later again in the program. We are talking recently about the subject of history. And in our last talk with Dr. Rushdoony, we noted that the sovereign God of the Bible is what Dr. Van Til might have referred to as the indispensable presupposition of all intelligible interpretation of history, that without our God, the Christian God, God who is described in our word that he has given us, you cannot really find meaning. You can only seek to impose it arbitrarily, and then, voila, it's all of a sudden gone. We need to return to the God of the Bible if we're going to find life with meaning. And today we want to talk about a particular history, not just world history or history in general, but American history. And the reason we want to do that is that American history has some unique claims for distinguishing history religiously. But these have been virtually eradicated in our day. There's been, as it were, a hatred for the Christian roots of America. Would you agree with that statement, Rush?
Yes, very much so.
Would you say that America was founded as a Christian nation?
Emphatically so. Emphatically so. They were making a break with the past, and that break extended across the boards. One historian, Bushman, has said that the War of Independence could only be understood in terms of the reviving post-millennialism in the colonies. To that extent, the biblical position of the colonists was determinative of their history.
Now, do you have any evidence? I mean, isn't the standard fare taught in the government schools today that there was no agreement, certainly no unanimity on religious things, not even a matter of different denominations, but different faiths altogether? How can someone today say that we were a Christian beginning?
We were Christian. We were not all Episcopal or Congregational. That's the distinction. In each county, you had very often, or in each state, depending on the pattern they followed, an establishment of religion. Now, in many states, it was an establishment of a particular group, as in Massachusetts and the Congregationalists. In others, it was the establishment of Christianity, so that any and all truly Christian churches were acceptable, were a part of the establishment.
So what about the recurring theme that people have heard ad nauseum today, that there's a wall of separation between church and state? How does that fit in?
Well, we have tended to come to that position, but even that does not mean there is a separation between Christianity and the state. In other words, where do we get our legal premises?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're beginning to shift, but up until now, our criminal law has been based on the Old Testament law, on biblical law. And the basic premises of civil government have been based, again, on the Bible. If we step outside the United States, we find totally different concepts of government. Whereas if we go to the Bible, we find the extent of participation in the life of the country remarkable. Every male in Israel was required to go 3 times a year to Jerusalem. Now, the purpose of that was both religious and political,
mm-hmm.
as well as familial. It was to tie the total life of the people to the faith that governed the people. Now, where else do you find that sort of thing? And when you realize that how much the town meeting determined the life of a community in early America, and how in different forms that participation of the people as families in the life of the state has been basic to our history, you realize how biblical we are.
But, you know, Rush, the people seem to make a serious blunder in their assessment today. It's almost just a slogan, the separation of church and state. If we take what you originally said and remember that some states had established religion, then Congress making no law respecting the establishment of religion was meant as a limitation on the federal government, not on the state governments.
Exactly. And if you study the records of the continental meetings that were called to ratify or disapprove of the Constitution, you find that there was a tremendous movement throughout all the colonies on the part of the clergy to have a special amendment calling for the separation of the state from the life of the churches.
Now, we have to be careful. When we say the state in that context, we mean the federal or united government, as it were.
Exactly.
As opposed to
the federal government could not establish a religion. That was a matter for the states. Now, the clergy was behind the First Amendment. That's been conceded by scholars in recent years. The phrase separation of church and state comes from Jefferson, not from the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence. And had Jefferson's personal faith been known at the time, that he was at best deistic, he would have been forbidden the vote, and even his children could have been taken from him according to the laws of Virginia.
Oh, is that right? So there were serious, self-conscious Christian laws governing the respective states.
Yes.
And then the founders, what they had in mind was to prevent a tyranny, for example, similar to the one that they had come from.
Exactly, and that's what they had in mind. The First Amendment was designed to prevent happening here with our central government what the central government in Britain was trying to do. It insisted that all the colonies had to be a part of the Church of England in their faith. And it finally was beginning to get around to thinking, we've got to force bishops upon every one of the colonies. Well, with that as Breidenbaugh, a noted historian, has pointed out, you have the heart of the War of Independence. They did not want bishops. But what history textbook ever mentions that?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Now, there's one might be forgiven for suspecting a conspiracy of silence concerning our Christian origins. Just this one fact, Rush, that we've talked about, this notion that Congress is forbidden to establish a religion, yet at the same time, very clearly open to anyone who wants to examine the question, you can find explicit Christian references in various state constitutions. In fact, tests of office that a person couldn't occupy office unless they were Trinitarian, unless they believed the Bible to be the Word of God. You couldn't be an officer in a state. So clearly, people who held to that would not turn around and the next day say, yet we don't want to have government to have anything to do with religion per se.
That's right. And remember that, for example, as far as east as Pennsylvania, where my wife Dorothy grew up, the Bible was read every day in classrooms to start the school. And primarily, of course, the readings favored the Psalms because the students were both Christian and Jew. However, much of the West, when I was a mature man in my early days as a minister, as I would travel, I would be asked to speak in a high school to the student body, and I would find, depending on the area, that in one area the high school was controlled by the Lutheran clergy, in another by the Catholic priest or nuns, and the nuns were teaching in a public high school, or in another area the Presbyterians were controlling things, and so on. Nobody thought there was anything wrong with this kind of thinking. In fact, when I was in high school, I can remember a student body meeting being called because there was a noted evangelist in town, and he was asked to address the student body, and it was a revivalistic type of message he gave.
Well, I'd like to, today they talk about whether you can have a prayer before a football game.
Yes. Well, nobody thought anything of that.
You know, Rush, you're 84 as we make this tape, and I'm 48, but even as I was growing up in Brooklyn, New York, in the grade schools, we had Bible reading in the government school daily.
Yes.
So it's not that long ago that it was a different picture.
The war was, the Second World War began a revolution against the Christian establishment in this country. And it was done from the top down, not because the people wanted it.
How so? How was this war against Christianity showing itself?
It was showing itself by trying to eliminate Christianity from the public life. It meant that the faith held by most people in the United States could not be expressed in the public life of the country. About the only expression allowed now is a chaplain and his prayer in Congress and a few formalities like that, but otherwise it is barred. Now, the results have been dramatic. When I went to school back in the 20s as a child in grade school, And then in high school, graduating in 34, we, in a farming community, could go and visit any one of our neighbors, and we were likely to find, maybe in a corner of the kitchen or someplace else, a gun rack with a shotgun and a rifle, and there might be a handgun in the bedroom on the dresser drawer or the nightstand. And yet I never heard of any kid touching one of those guns without permission.
Mm-hmm.
As early as the 50s, I can recall one man who gave his six-year-old son on his birthday a .22 rifle, and told him, now you're to go out in the pasture. There are a lot of gopher holes and squirrel holes there. When any of them stick their head up, shoot them. Because a horse stepping into one of them can break his leg. And he was also told if he ever misused the rifle, it would be taken from him and he would get a whipping. Now, that was life as I knew it. I never heard until in recent years of kids killing each other with guns or taking guns to school and that sort of thing. What's the difference? The difference then was that virtually everyone was Christian or was radically impacted by the Christian faith of society. I knew of one atheistic family in our small town and area, and everybody thought they were kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Christian culture.
Well, to this day, there are considerable remnants and testimonies. The names of towns as you drive through Pennsylvania, for example, or most other states, will have biblical roots.
Yes.
You see it everywhere, but there is a self-conscious war that seeks to eliminate every vestige of this testimony of our Christian heritage.
That's right. We have that from coast to coast. In fact, we sometimes have it in foreign languages. In California, not too very far from where I grew up, there was and still is a small town named Yetem, Y-E-T-T-E-M, which is Armenian for Eden.
Hmm.
Now, it isn't just the English-speaking names that testify to our Christian heritage.
Clearly. Let me just interrupt our discussion to tell listeners that they would do themselves a great favor by subscribing to the Chalcedon Report, where they will be exposed to thinking that goes beyond the typical border experience today by Christians who have been taught to think about nothing else than their salvation. Now, salvation, of course, is critically important, but salvation is the beginning of something, not the end of something. And if you want to know what to do with salvation, what to do for the glory of God, how you can apply the faith, then you ought to be reading the Chalcedon Report. You can get a sample copy by sending $2 to Chalcedon. That's spelled C-H-A-L-C-E-D-O-N. And the address is Box 158 in Vallecito, California. That's V-A-L-L-E-C-I-T-O, California 95251. If you have a credit card handy, call up 209-736-4365. Rush, as we return to the subject of Christianity and our nation, I want to ask you about, I think it was Robert Ingram had written in The World Under God's Law, that a Christian nation is not necessarily one with a born-again population, but one with Christian law. Is that a
yes.
true statement?
Excellent statement. And at one time, the whole of Europe and elsewhere, and the United States and North and South Americas, were in some form or another under God's law. In fact, in this country, and this was pointed out by a Jewish lawyer and scholar, the courts decided cases and juries decided cases by using the Bible. They didn't have a lot of statutory laws. They had the Bible. They all believed in it. Therefore, that's what was the governing law.
Well, now we've gone so far as to have witnessed several cases in the last 5 to 10 years wherein verdicts were overturned because the Bible was mentioned.
Yes. Now, if they'd mentioned something from a Buddhist writing, it would not have happened.
Or the Marquis de Sade.
Or, yes.
So there's, would you agree? I think it's pretty, pretty hard to deny, but it seems to be open season on America's Christian history.
Very true. Very true.
Now, who's doing the shooting? Because there still is a very strong Christian faith in our nation, yet that voice is silenced.
Well, our statist and a great deal of our non-statist education is pretty much captured by humanistic scholars. Their influence in matters of state is very great. They have organized to de-Christianize this country through various agencies. As a result, the Christians, being just silent about these matters, have been the losers. I can recall not too many years ago, 25 years ago, being reprimanded by a minister for calling attention to what humanism was doing in this country. And his reason was, the humanists have never come out with anything against the churches, so why should we be hostile to them? That's a very provincial kind of perspective.
Also, untrue.
Yes.
Because there are more ways to skin a cat than one.
Of course.
Now, it seems to me that what you're saying, what's implicit in what you're saying, is that we need desperately to give our children, our covenant children, a sense of the glory of our Christian past.
Exactly.
And that is so important, that sense of our Christian past, that the humanists will do anything to keep Christians from having it.
Yes. Our country was known the world over essentially as a Christian nation in a unique sense. When my parents migrated here as refugees from persecution in 1915, November, a few months before I was born, that was how they knew America, the United States. And that was how countless other immigrants, because I've lived among immigrant peoples a good deal of my life, have known in the past the United States as the Christian nation. Now that is no longer true.
Let me add one anecdote to this. It's quite pertinent. It wasn't long ago that we received an immigrant into our home from Vietnam. She was raised in Vietnam. She was a teenager, and she had decided that since she was coming to a Christian nation, she was going to convert to Christianity upon her arrival here.
Yes.
And many others, as you have pointed out, especially in the 19th century, it was standard fare for them to pick their denomination, but they knew they would become Christian when they came here.
That's right. And whereas the country they came from might not be Christian to any other than a formal established church status, the minute they came here, they started building churches.
It's a glorious history. Sorry that time forbids us from developing it in any detail, but that's why I'm urging the listeners to take some action to educate themselves and to become conversant with these things. They need to hear what our actual history is. They need to understand what God has done in history, so that at least in part they can have that sense of biblical covenantal pride that they come from a place where God has been especially active and to whom much is given, much is required. Now, minimally, you should be aware of this and you should be teaching your children this. To help you do that, you have organizations such as Chalcedon, and you should write to Chalcedon, C-H-A-L-C-E-D-O-N, at Box 158 in Vallecito, California. That's V like Victor, A-L-L-E-C-I-T-O, California 95251, and ask for, just drop $2 in, ask for a sample copy of the Chalcedon Report, and look over the volumes that are available to you for your own edification and for that of your children, so that we in our generation might recapture the sense of covenantal pride that we come with a Christian history that God has given to us and that the humanists don't want us to know about. Call 209-736-4365 and talk to them about what materials you can order with your credit card. Dr. Rushdoony, it's been great speaking with you. I look forward to our next time together. Until then, this is the voice of Chalcedon, Steve Schlissel, and Dr. Rushdoony signing off, wishing you the richest blessings of our covenant God.